It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Do we know what episode number this is?
Number 265.
That's what I thought. I was making sure you knew. You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
It is episode number 265. And even the Grinch will enjoy this episode, especially since we happen to know for a fact, Jeff, that the Grinch is a fan of the High Republic. How are you?
Geek me all knowing boxes stay open May 4th. I'm hoping we're gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
I'm good, Matt, and I suppose it makes sense that the Grinch would be a fan of the High Republic since he lives high up on a hill above Whoville.
Yeah,
of course.
Because I was reaching. I was very much reaching.
Here's a bit of trivia that makes me angry. Do you know what the highest grossing Christmas themed film of all time is?
Die Hard?
No, it is the 2018 version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, where the Grinch is voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Say what?
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yep. At one point, Home Alone was not only the highest-grossing Christmas movie, but it was the number three grossing movie of all time, highest-grossing movie of all time. And now we get this movie that came out 3 years ago that I don't know anybody who saw, but somehow it made, you know, $1 billion, close to it. Yeah, I'm just showing my age.
Yeah, you are showing your age, but that's okay. Feel free. Feel free.
Well, we only have two books to discuss this week. Well, really, it's more like two and a half because we have the High Republic Adventures Annual 2021, which is five short stories. And then we have the High Republic for Marvel issue number 12.
Yeah.
But before that, do we have any news, Matt?
No news whatsoever. However, given the week that we're in, do not be surprised if this week we get an advanced look at the Marvel solicits for March for Star Wars comics. So,
okay.
You know, so we'll see how that goes. Right. And of course, we don't expect any from IDW for obvious reasons. So we'll see. But the question is, will we get any inkling of something from Dark Horse Comics?
I hope so.
Cool. You know, they're going to start in spring, and technically March is, you know, sort of seen as the gateway to spring. But you know, we'll see. It could be March, April, or May.
I guess we'll wait with bated breath.
Yes, although think about it. What the next Star Wars celebration is in May, is it not?
Correct.
It would sort of be a perfect launching pad for Dark Horse to reveal its titles.
You would think so. I would think so as well. So hopefully we'll hear something then.
Yeah, well, hopefully before then, but you know, we will see. We'll definitely see. So
but that's it. That's all the news that's fit to speak.
For now, yeah. I'm sure something will change between now and the time the podcast comes out in the next 48 to 72 hours.
Probably right about an hour before the show drops
typically,
on Wednesday morning.
Typically, which is why we have Twitter and Facebook. So
exactly. And again, right. Kudos to you, Matt. You do a great job of keeping all of those updated.
I appreciate it very much. Your kind words will carry me through into 2022.
Let's hope.
Indeed. Okay.
So, yeah, High Republic Adventures Annual 2021, an $8 book.
Yes, but also a fairly lengthy book. What, 50-something pages plus?
Yeah.
You know, that's a bargain. Well, maybe, kind of not.
It depends on how much you like the stories.
It's a little pricey, but here's the thing, is this brings all five of the Lumineers together, which is awesome.
You know, I love their band.
Well, you know, it's the five who were behind the, you know, the first phase and have been the architects of the High Republic since it was first announced. Literally just everybody, you know, Daniel Jose Older, Kevin Scott, Justina Ireland, Claudia Gray,
Charles Soule.
Yeah, I heard he writes comics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's an up and comer. So, we'll probably see more of him in the future. So, yeah, but it's a collection of five stories. You know, one is Set for Life by Charles Soule and Sam Beck with letters by Johanna Nottoli. No Stone Unturned, written by Claudia Gray, with art by Jason Liu and colors by Megan Wang, with letters by Neil Uyataki. And Neil, if I'm mispronouncing your name, I do profoundly apologize. First Mission, written by Justina Ireland, with art by Yale Nathan, and again, letters by Neil Uyataki. Crash and the Crew Do What They Do, written
Best
by...
Best title of the book.
That was a great title, and it was nice. I like it. It was freewheeling, very,
probably,
very.
That's probably my favorite story in the book. Yeah,
I got to admit. In terms of story, I loved Crash and the Crew Do What They Do, and of course, written by Daniel Jose Older, with art by Jesse Lonergan. Always glad to see Jesse Lonergan art, and letters by Jake M. Wood, and then The Hall, which is written by Kevin Scott, with art by Stefano Simeone, and letters by Nathan Wittig, and of course. Stefano had some art a couple months ago in Star Wars Adventures, so I was pleased to see that his work, that Stefano's work was back. Of course, all of these stories were handled by assistant editor Riley Farmer and editor Heather Antos. And for Lucasfilm, we've got Robert Simpson, the senior editor, Michael Siglain, the creative director, Troy Alders, the art director, Phil Shostak, the creative art manager and Broaxium's number one fan, although I hear he is coming up to our number two fan for Star Wars Splash Page. I've heard that through unofficial back channels.
You and I, of course, being in a tie for number one fan of this show.
Well, I believe it was you and my mom. So I'm number three.
Oh, okay.
Actually, gotcha. No, Chris Ryan's of Broaxium is number three. So. So I think I'm number four. It depends.
Not bad company to be in, all things
exactly.
Considered.
And of course, from the story group, we've got Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, Emily Shkukani, and Jason D. Stein. I imagine none of them has actually ever even heard of our podcast. But
you'd be surprised.
If they have, we're glad they're listening. Five short stories.
Yeah, and we'll just do a kind of high-level synopsis of each one go through.
And I will say up front, this is a book, if you are a fan of the High Republic, if you have read all the novels, all the fiction, Star Wars Insider, all the short stories, the YA novels, the kids' novels, the kids' books, of course, the High Republic Adventures itself, as well as the High Republic comic from Marvel, this is your book. This is something that you are going to cherish and hold close to your chest and love and pat and feed and take care of and hold their hands when they're sick and get them off to school the first day and be there when they graduate and write that first tuition check and everything. And justifiably so, because it runs the gamut. And we see a lot of familiar faces to these five different stories. We've got the Blade of Bardotta. We've got, AKA Porter. We've got Loden Greatstone, May Loden, to dust to dust, I guess.
So, right. Yeah.
Sorry, that was, is it too soon? It's probably too soon. So, but
no, this was 200 years ago at least. Yeah. We're good.
Yeah. We've got Belle and the Char Hound, so which is very, very awesome. I'm really digging that. And more importantly, we've got Leox and Geode, and it's awesome. It's a great, great sampling of different characters, and each story is imparting a little bit of Jedi wisdom and lore, and of course, since it's an all ages book, there's a moral to the story here. One thing I do want to point out, for example, in the second story, No Stone Unturned, I never ever thought I would see Geode having a drink.
Right. And I want to say the art, specifically the colors on that book, I really enjoyed the pink hue of that book, where it just everything looks like the whole planet is always in twilight.
Oh, it was great. You know, that sunset. Of course, that was work by Megan Wang, you know, working off of Jason Liu's art. And of course, you know, I love Jason Liu's art. I hope we get more of Jason Liu in Star Wars, whether it's in Marvel or Dark Horse in 2022. But you know, it was also just a fun story, you know, because we don't really get to see, you know, we don't really get to see the crew like that. And so,
right.
I mean, you know, because we've got, you know, Affy and Geode and Leox, and it was a pleasant little story. All of these stories, despite the length of the book, they're fairly quick stories, but they pack a lot of punch. You know, some of these stories, maybe 7 to 8 pages in length, but you know, I did feel like I was reading a 22 to 24 page comic book and reading these stories. So.
Well, and especially with Crash and the crew do what they do, the way that those panels were lined up and arranged.
Oh yeah,
was extremely interesting, because we basically got in each panel, we've almost got in each page, we've got a circle in the middle of the page, and we have a couple of 2-page spreads where we have panels sort of cut out around it, almost like stained glass or a mosaic.
That is a great observation, and I am really proud of you.
Thank you. And I just the way it and again, the art and everything on this one is just this is something I would read an ongoing series about this group and whatever is going to happen in the story. And each of these stories felt like either connective tissue or a prequel to something else that's going to come later. So I hope that these are storylines that we're going to see in either the last issue or two of High Republic Adventures, or maybe in some of the IDW books.
The Dark Horse books.
That's what I meant. Sorry. Yeah.
You know, I have to agree with you on that, because we got. I mean, like the I think it's the third one, the third story. Let me get up to the page here. First Mission by Justina Ireland and Yale Nathan, and this was great because we essentially, you know, we get to see Vernestra Rowe meet her master Stellan Geos for the first time. You know, and we see the two of them sort of, you know, get off on a good start by sparring, you know, as Stellan prepares to mentor Vernestra, and it's told in such a way that even if you didn't know who Vernestra was from reading, you know, Justina's works, you're immediately interested in the dynamic between these two and their relationship, you know, because it's a lot like we're seeing, you know, toward the end of the way into the Phantom Menace, you know, with Anakin Skywalker being paired off with Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, and we get to see how this relationship starts. And then, you know, it also sort of brings to mind the work from Marvel's Obi-Wan and Anakin miniseries, you know, with Obi-Wan passing on knowledge to a younger Anakin, obviously not a young Anakin, but not a, you know, not a, you know, the Anakin that we knew from Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, which, you know, can be defined in 4 words. Lord Anakin, chill out. So, you know, but, and that's why, to me, if you, despite the fact that this, you know, that this series is coming, this phase, if you will, is coming to an end, and IDW is no longer publishing Star Wars Adventures, I mean, to my mind, this annual serves as the perfect example of, oh, hey, you like Star Wars, but you've never read the High Republic, give this annual a read. You know, it's, you know, and this is the perfect marketing tool to get somebody who's not read the High Republic in any form or fashion, to get them hooked.
It is very much. It's sort of like a sampler. Yeah,
it is very much. Yeah, is
very and, much. And is.
Then, and then of course, you know, the final story, which you know, which was illustrated by Stefano, and of course written by Kevin Scott. You know, its focus, of course, is the Nile, and the dog eat dog, MO that prevails throughout the Nile, because, you know, we have Lorna D making an appearance, you know, while Slombo is making a raid on a vault that may have, treasured artifacts. And of course, Lorna shows up and she wants to upstage Slombo by, you know, being there when the vault is cracked and she can claim the booty in her name and give it to the Eye, AKA Markion Rowe. But Slombo wants nothing to do with it. And of course, there's a nice little sort of twist at the, you know, the last couple of pages. And surprise, you know, to go all Gomer Pyle, surprise, surprise, surprise. You know, Lorna D, it's, whoop, I'm out.
Just remember, this is your mission, to Slambo.
Yeah.
And the thing I love is that, you know, I don't know if we want to spoil, we start the book and we end the book with Porter.
Yes.
With the same person. And I thought that was a nice little bookend to it.
Yeah, it totally was. And, you know, and of course, you know, I do like the fact that, you know, the main cover for this issue, which is by Stefano Simeone, you know, we get pretty much a who's who of who are in the story. You know, we see Vernestra on the cover. We see Lorna, you know, we see Affy. But then, like, there's some of the variants, like the Jason Liu cover features, you know, Porter, the Blade of Bardotta. So, you know, and it kind of gives away, you know, what happens in that story, but not until you actually read the story. And then, of course, I was pleased to see that IDW did a couple of exclusives for this one. They had an online exclusive that sold out within probably under an hour and a half, if not faster, by Derek Charm, that shows Vernestra and Stellan Geos. There's a lot of people out there thirsty for Stellan Geos artwork. I mean, really thirsty. And then Things from Another World had an awesome variant by John Lamb featuring Bell and his Charhound, as did That Dude Books that featured Logan Greatstone and Bell and the Charhound as well. So, but yeah, just, you know, otherwise, I mean, just solidly well done book. I really enjoyed it a lot. This was it was everything an annual is supposed to be. It gave us different stories that were easily one and done. That fit nicely into the milieu of the High Republic adventures and indeed, you know, the entirety of the High Republic. So I was very pleased with this book.
Yeah, I was too. Like you said, it's dense, but it flows well. And it's kind of a nice primer. I don't know that I would have preferred to have seen maybe three of these stories a little more fleshed out, but I don't know which two I would have jettisoned. So That's always a good sign. So yeah, really, really enjoyable.
It is a treasure trove of the High Republic riches. So definitely, if you did not pre-order this, head out to your comic book shop today on Wednesday and pick it up. If you can't get to your shop today, call them and have them pull you a copy aside. It's worth having.
I think so as well. So we'll take a short break. We'll be back to discuss the Marvel's High Republic number 12.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Okay, Marvel's The High Republic number 12. First off, I think I may have mentioned this last month. This cover, I love everything about this cover. The color, the lines, the stance of this character, the alien, the chest burster, face hugger.
Yeah, you know, this Lorna D, you know, almost all the Nile are scary in their visage, but when Phil Noto draws Lorna D, it takes that that wow factor up pretty high. So yeah, that was really good. There's also a great variant by Casper Wingard, which is really cool. And then Mike McCone and Guru EFX have a variant as well. But this issue to me, it's starting to gear things up. You know, because, you know, if you're at all familiar with the High Republic as a concept, you have to remember at the start, you know, this, you know, we're all luminous beings. You know, this is, you know, this is being marketed as the Jedi at their apex. But as we approach now phase 3 of the publishing project, things are starting to get dark.
Yeah, they have reached the apex and they're now on a downhill slide.
Yeah.
I'm kind of two minds of this book, and we'll talk about it as we go along. A couple of things in this book really rubbed me the wrong way, but I think they were supposed to. So we'll discuss as we go along.
Okay. Well, first off,
just settle in, folks, because it's getting dark.
It is. And we are starting. But you'll hear why as we get delve deeper into this issue. But this is the High Republic Jedi's End. That's pretty dark. This is the second chapter, The Spirit of Disunity. In a nutshell, the Jedi have lost their collective mind over the leveler. You know, a horror that is turning their members into crumbling husks. I mean, Loden Greatstorm has been struck down, and of course now the Bond twins, Tarek and Sarret of Starlight Beacon, are in stasis and have not yet collapsed into dust. But you know,
they look to be well on their way.
Yeah, it's not looking good for them. And of course, you know, the Jedi Marshal Avar Kriss, she thinks Lorna D is the Eye of the Nile. You know, no spoiler there, she's not. And she wants to do everything in her power to bring Lorna D in. And the only problem is the Jedi Council, including, you know, its member Stellan Geos, which is her old friend, the Council has a different view. You know, they're like, all right, you know, just ease up a bit. You know, we have to protect the Republic. We can't just go off on this, on a mission like that. But, you know, Avar, you know, again, she is looking at something with singular purpose, and that is taking down Lorna D. So writer, of course, Kevin Scott. Artist on this one is Georges Gentil. Colors by Carlos Lopez. Inks are by Carl Story. Letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Ariana Mayer. As we said, we've already gone over the cover artists. Book design is Carlos Lau. The assistant editor is Danny Kazem. The editor is Mark Panizia. And then, of course, the same crew for the Lucasfilm side of things. And we open up, and again, we have this really nice narrative framing from Trinis Keeves.
And, right, the inner monologue.
Yeah, and I am very grateful for the fact that her inner monologue is done with white text over a green background. You know, that helps sets it apart from the actual speech balloons or, you know, dialogue. And we open up and we see a very tired looking Avar Kriss, you know, unfortunately having to deal with the administrative side of her job.
Right. Having to quell the rage within her to attend staff meetings. I can't imagine how draining that must be.
So she's there with, you know, with Treve and Skeer. Maru is talking to Stellan Geos via hologram from the council. And, you know, the Starlight Beacon has been transferred to the ERAM system without incident, he relays. And literally, it's been towed. And, of course, they're there to begin work on the relief effort. As we cut to the next panel where we see Galactic Star Cruiser, the Halcyon Legacy, having helped tow Starlight Beacon. So already right there, we get I don't want to say that this is our first in-comic appearance of the Halcyon Legacy, but it may well could be. Drunk Wookiee will probably know better. And so I would not be surprised if this is in fact the first appearance of this ship. And of course, Halcyon Legacy is based on Disney's Galactic Star Cruiser attraction, and the Halcyon Legacy miniseries, which will be 5-issue, starts in January.
Excellent. Yeah. And I love this. Anybody who's ever worked in corporate America understands exactly her Trennis's voice over here, because she says, "It now seems the Republic Jedi Council are determined to send us to the site of every natural disaster on the frontier. So we should have known that towing Starlight to Dalna had only been the beginning. I understand the reasons after Dalna, why dispatch rescue teams from Starlight when they can send the entire station?"
Yeah, she's got a point.
And she does it. It's why Starlight Beacon exists. You know, she says that. And to support the Outer Rim in any way possible, make the frontier a safer place. Trouble is, that seemed a lot easier a few weeks ago before. How are we pronouncing this? Zias?
I was pronouncing it Zias, yes.
Okay. And she says, before Lorna D, and we get this great reminder of what happened in the last issue. And this shot of the ship taking off with the three Jedi down on the bottom. It's the end of the last issue. Reminds me very much of some of the shots that we saw in Firefly, the TV show, when things were just rattling and shaking apart. It was very, very earthbound but spacefaring. Just what it reminds me of, which is a really high praise coming from me. And we see that it got away because Skeer was not able to help, and Trennis was in no shape to help, even though she's blaming herself for not being able to help. And
Avar, of course, is very upset. I mean, because she's telling Skeer, look, get Keeve to help, and Skeer's like, no, she can't. Because you have to remember, Keeve was on Zaius, and undercover, and was hit pretty hard. And Chris is just, she is so consumed with stopping Lorna D, because, to her, Lorna D is the answer to the question, of what killed Loden Greatstorm, of what has happened to Tarek and Sarret. And so she wants to stop at nothing. And so she's like, she'll get up. She can find the Force will help. And finally, even Chris is unable to stop Lorna D from blasting away and getting out of orbit, or getting into orbit and, into space.
Yeah, and she's so single-minded about this all that it really is sort of taking her away from her better judgment. And Trennis, she feels bad. She goes, how many times have I replayed that moment in my head, feeling Yevar's anguish or pain, wishing I could have done more, and knowing, full well she should know that she really was in no position to do anything about it. So they're getting, they cut back and we're getting updated on what's going on. And finally, Avar just had enough. She really says she has enough. She says, your work coordinating the relief effort has been exemplary, Maru, but we want to know about the Ataraxia. Has a path drive been attached to the ship? She says, well, yes. Why don't you finish the installation this morning? And it's safe to use? And we get reminded, he says, this is the path drive salvaged from the Nile spacecraft destroyed at the Battle of Gilov. She says, the drive that contains the location of the main Nile base, yes. Our assault can proceed as planned. He's beside himself. He says, Marshal Chris, I must remind you, the Council has recommended caution. He says, and I must remind you, Stellan, that time is running out. The Nile have a weapon that can turn our people to dust. Lorna D is the key to that weapon. According to the records found on the Nile ships, the pirates operate from an area they call No Space. Their base, known as the Great Hall, is a platform protected by vacuum shields, and if intel obtained from Dalna can be believed, recently fortified against attack. And he says, all the more reason for prudence. Maybe we can use one of the capital ships as a scout. She says, no, the Nile have repeatedly attacked the Jedi. She says, you mean they've attacked the Republic. So he's reminding her, you're taking this personally. And she says, well, and we must be open in our response. Our failure on Zaius proved that once and for all that servants of the light should never lurk in the shadows. We must be better than our enemies. We must shine. And she goes to walk off, and he calls back to her. She says, thank you for your counsel, Master Geos. The Ataraxia will be prepared for launch. and Trennis is just, she's worried. She goes, our failure on Zaius, everyone knows who failed. Everyone knows that I should have acted instead of hiding like a coward, that I should have been prepared.
But she was. I mean, she was prepared.
She was. And this is the start of part of the problems I have with this book is she is extremely self-important here, assuming that everyone's talking about her. And I bristle at that when I see it in characters, because I bristle at it when I see it in people. Yeah. Especially in myself. And she says, well, maybe then Sarret and Tarek might still be with us rather than trapped in a hibernation trance. And we see them, and they really do. They look like they've got the gray from Game of Thrones, the grayscale, and or dragon scale, whatever they call it. And she says, hey, can you hear me in there, either of you? I wish we could talk to give anything to make sense of it. What we saw in a great shot of that nebula. And she said, I should have been stronger for us. It's all such a mess now. You, me, Avar, and in walks Master Maru. And he says, is there a change in the Bond twins? No, they're alive just, and he says, lost. And they're not the only ones. He says, Jedi Trennis, Keeve, I need you to watch Marshal Chris. I fear she's allowing her emotions to govern her path. It's a very Jedi Council sending Anakin to spy on Palpatine.
Yeah, and I, in a way, I know that Maru's intentions here are noble, But, you know, I also really think that's a lot to ask of somebody who has, you know, who has only recently been elevated to the rank of Jedi Knight.
Well, and especially considering what she just went through. She was undercover.
Yeah.
And what she witnessed and everything. And I get, you know, that they have to ask a lot of everybody because these are desperate times and everything. But, yeah, send somebody else.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, Maru drops that, you know, because, you know, Shree was like, you know, I'm flattered that you would even trust me with this, yada yada, but it should be Skeer. And then of course he says, well, maybe, but that's not possible. And then she's like, no, it's not. And this is the real heart of the issue, you know, because we have been building up to this with Skeer. You know, he has said before in a couple of previous issues that he feels that he's losing touch with the Force and that he's not able to help the way he can, even though that's, I disagree, even if he's not Force touched, you know, he's still got years of training, so he's still useful. But, you know, this is where we find a bomb got dropped on Zaius, you know, because, you know, again, Chris is just like, you know, telling the Ataraxia, you know, track Lorna D's ship, find out where she's going. And, you know, she's ready to give chase. And Skeer's just like, you know, Marshall, we got to get the Vaughn twins and Keeve back to Starlight, their injuries. And she's like, no. You know, because, you know, she's very upset that Skeer did not do his job. You know, she said defensive positions only. And yet you cut through the Nile, you know, like a rancor that sensed blood. And, you know, she is just not happy at all. You know, and for good reason.
Good reason. And again, yeah, he's sort of been towing that line really since we've seen him. Since we met him, I should say.
Yeah. And, you know, now it's all sort of boiling over, if you will, or bubbling over, I think. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I agree 100%. And so what happens here, she says, your actions were not worthy of a Jedi. She said, the time for explanations is past. Maybe I failed you, Skeer. Maybe I was wrong to allow things to continue. For now, you left me very little choice. Master Skeer, your lightsaber, please. This is the equivalent of a cop having to hand over its badge and gun. Only maybe even worse. And she says, thank you. You're hereby relieved of all active duties as a Jedi pending the judgment of the council. And of course, Trennis is horrified. She says, don't do this. And Skeer says, Keeve, you need to rest. This isn't your fight.
But, you know, to me, that is such a powerful page. And it's a powerful panel. You know, the fact that it's even come down to this, you know, on the field of battle, not behind closed doors, between two well-respected and, you know, who've long been friends, Jedi. You know, and of course, you know, so it's only natural that Keeve would, you know, come to Skeer's defense because, you know, he is her former master. And then I think, you know, when we look at the bottom of this page and where we see the look of Chris walking away, not just carrying Skeer's lightsaber, but cradling it to her chest.
She hates that she had to do it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, and of course, I think this is also what it means to be a leader. Is you have to do something that you yourself do not want to do, but you think it's best for the group as a whole.
So. Right. And from there, we cut to Skeer meditating in his room, and this is sort of the scene that I'm not sure how I feel about, because I love this, because he's sitting there. I love the way he's drawn. He looks like a cross between Ben Grimm and a Skrull.
He does, though. But, and, you know, and I got to admit, I love the ambiance of his room here. And I know that Kevin Scott's a fan of Star Trek, and this kind of reminds me
of... Very Spockish.
This kind of reminds me of those scenes we saw in some of the Star Trek movies of Spock's quarters. So.
Yeah, all he's missing is one of those infinity mirrors with the lights in it to look like they go on forever.
There you go.
And we know it's Trennis, and he keeps saying not now. She says, then when? He says, did you just use the Force to override my door? Yes. Proud of me? No. Liar. You need to go. He says, no, we need to talk. I need to talk. Not to the person who's been hiding away in his chambers ever since we got back with my master. A master who must do nothing before the council makes its judgment, he says. And she says, why? He says, because Eivor was right. I should have shared what was happening to me, but instead I kept it a secret. I was ashamed, scared. I failed you all. And so she keeps pressing, then tell me what's happening. Why can't you trust me, Skeer? Why can't you tell me what's wrong? And he says, Keeve, I've never trusted anyone more. It's me I can't trust. And that's when he tells her, He has what they call Magrock syndrome, a disease peculiar to Trandoshans, rare but potent. Over time, the brain gives into its base urges, aggression, fury, rage. My mind has been subconsciously dealing with the condition, but the effort required, she says, has left you unable to connect to the force, so she realizes it. She says, is there a cure? And he says, well, Dr. Janol says there are a number of possibilities, but there's a chance I may never be able to wield the force again. Until then, I'm a danger. And this, I think, is fascinating because this is the first time that Star Wars, to my mind, as far as I know, has really dealt with mental illness in any kind of real and substantial way.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I mean, you know, and it's good that they're being so open about it, particularly, you know, in this day and age, as more awareness around mental illness, you know, has gained steam and, you know, and is no longer hidden in the shadows. And and this is exactly right, because this is something we often, you know, it's familiar territory to see a Jedi having to deal, you know, with all of the complexities of being a Jedi Knight. But I don't think in this capacity of the mental aspect of it, yeah, you're right. And I applaud it. That's awesome. So.
But the thing of it is, though, the next thing is the part that I'm just not sure about, because her Trennis's response to it is, no, I can't believe that. I won't. You can't give up like this. And he says, it's not giving up. She goes, it is, and you know it. We strive, we repeat, we succeed. Remember that, Skier? Remember what you taught me? And this is that very old way of thinking about mental illness is you just power through it. You just decide. You make the decision that you're not going to let it control you. And while that can work for some people, if it's a situational depression sort of thing, it's different when it's a chemical issue, like the one he has. And I simultaneously hate the character for doing that to him, but I also understand what they're doing, because if they're trying to present us with this sort of this discussion, this concept, this is a conversation that many people who have a mental illness like this will have with their loved ones. And I wish it had gone a different way, because what happens is she tells him that Maru wants him to keep an eye on Avar. She goes, everything I've touched over the last few months has turned to Bantha crap. And he says, that's not true. She says, I need you on the Atraxia. I need you by my side. She's being very selfish here. She clearly doesn't understand what he's dealing with. And he tells her, you must go. You have a duty. You're a Jedi. She goes, yeah, I am. And I thought you were too. And that makes me hate this character. And I don't want to hate this character, but it makes me hate this character. And granted, I'm probably bringing a lot of personal baggage to this, because I've seen situations like this play out with people I care about. But then she says, I guess I was wrong. And I hope that they're building towards something where this character, where Trennis can grow from this and realize something. I don't trust that that's where they're going by the way this issue ends, though. Because as we know what happens, the Ataraxia is cleared to launch. They're ready to take off. The path drive has been fully integrated. And he says, as far as the pirate junk can be, Marshall, it's as integrated as it can be. And she says, okay. And Keeve shows up. She says, I thought for a moment you weren't going to join us. And she says, wouldn't miss it for all the world. And she says, I would understand if you wanted to sit this one out after what happened on Zaius. And I love this image that we have of the ship. I guess that's the drive being...
Yeah. Being attached to it.
Being attached to it. It's a really, really good image. She goes, this pirate junk is going to take us straight to the woman who planned the Valo atrocity and reduced our fellow Jedi to husks. And Keeve says, and I want to see this through for Sarret and Tarek. And then we see, and so do I. And Skier has showed up. He says, I know what you're going to say, Marshall. Until the council decides my fate, I am a Jedi.
And I like that, because he was throwing it back into Chris, you know, but right. He's doing so by the book.
Yes. And he says, if you will have me at your side. And of course, Keeve says, yes, she's getting what she wants. And she tells Avar, she says, I'll vouch for him. And I promise if he steps a millimeter out of line, I will gladly knock him on his scaly ass, which, again, this is it's good dialogue, but it's not something I'm used to hearing from Star Wars. I'm still not sure how I feel about it. I'm waiting to see where the story's going to go.
Well, you know, if we could get Lando in the War of the Bounty Hunter saying, you know, Chewbacca beat his ass.
Beat his ass. And you remember that seemed out of place to me then, too. So maybe I'm just a fuddy-duddy. I don't know.
Well, I see, except to me, you know, this one, you know, with Keeve saying, you know, knock him on his scaly ass, it works. you know, because she's cognizant of the fact that they're now equals and she's not his master. So
true. And he says
he's not her master, excuse me.
Right. And he tells her, you know, she isn't joking. And I love the way that these two inset faces are drawn of Eivor Chris and Kiev Trennis, because the look of desperation and just weariness and exhaustion in their eyes.
But also love.
Appreciation and love, yes.
There's a love there.
So she says, everyone take your positions. So we're closing the bay doors. And in her voiceover, Trennis says, this is it. No going back. And they say, acknowledge it to Ataraxi, may the force be with you. And Eivor says, may the force be with us all. Jedi Manchi, prepare to activate the drive. On my mark. 3, 2, 1. And they take off, mark, and they take off with a big whoosh. As Chris is saying, I don't know what the future holds, and I don't know if I'm ready. But I can't let that stop me. And then we get to be continued. And again, I don't know where the story is going to go. I just know this is not healthy for Skeer.
No, it's not.
And I don't understand how it seems like he understands that he shouldn't have kept this from everyone. And so he knows that he's a danger. It's out in the open now. And so now he's just going to turn on a dime and say, well, okay, fine, I'm going to go, knowing that I could be putting everyone I care about in danger.
Does seem a bit of a risk, no?
Yeah, I'm holding out my final judgment until the story resolves itself. But I don't like this. The last half of this issue, I thought it was going one place and it didn't, and I don't like where it went.
Okay, well, but I think also it sets up a lot of room for where it could go.
And it could, like I said, I'm holding out hope that they're going to do something interesting with it. I trust this team because they've done good work so far, but I seems a bit melodramatic to me so far. But it sounds like you had a different opinion of it. I know I kind of hijacked the discussion there at the end with my harangue, but
no, you didn't hijack it. Not at all. I do believe that it's going to sort of bring us to. You know, I do wonder if, you know, how much longer we're going to have Skeer.
Well, and I just hope that we don't lose a good opportunity to have a meaningful discussion in a Star Wars property about something like mental illness, something that is an Earthbound problem that can be dealt with so well in this sort of environment.
Well, and I think this is definitely a start to it, though. And I think they'll probably, you know, I'll be curious to see how they have built upon it in the next couple of issues.
Agreed.
Because, you know, we've got three more issues if it's a classic arc. So, you know, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Again, you know, it's not a bad issue. Not writing all the art, the writing, everything about this book was so well done. I'm just not sold on the story just yet, but we'll see what happens.
All right. That's good. But, you know, again, it's a start and I'm glad to see it.
So. Agreed.
All right.
So that's it for the books. A lot of heavy stuff. What have we got next week?
All right. Well, next week on the 21st, we have Star Wars Adventures, The Light and the Dark trade paperback. And that's, of course, collecting, I believe, the first 5 issues of Star Wars Adventures Volume 2. We have, at long last, after many delays, the Darth Vader Omnibus, which collects the entirety of Darth Vader Volume 2. As well as the annual number 2. So there's going to be a lot of people very happy with that, including myself. We have Darth Vader Volume 3, the trade paperback collecting the War of the Bounty Hunters arc. And then we have Star Wars Adventures, The Weapon of a Jedi trade that is collecting that 2-issue miniseries. And then finally, on Wednesday, the 22nd, comic-wise, we get the High Republic Trail of Shadows, number 3. We get Darth Vader, number 19, thank goodness. And then we get Star Wars Adventures, number 13. So, you know, there you go. So we'll have three comics to discuss next week.
Hope you are buying those from your local comic shop if they're going to be Christmas presents, because they're cutting it awfully close.
Exactly. And of course, you know, as always, remember, if you order the Vader Omnibus from the from Amazon. It was this is the comic store release, but you know, so it may not be on Amazon until a couple weeks later, but you know, we'll see.
Right. Okay, well, we'll be back next week to discuss all of that and probably a whole lot more.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Until then, for Star Wars Flash Page, I'm Jeff.
And I am Matt.
May the Force be with you.
Always.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!